border to border, coast to coast, and around the globe via the World Wide Web. This is America Talks Radio for Patriots. Now, reporting for duty from the command center, the Doctor of the Republic, David Zublik.
And the battle is joined, my friends, the battle to restore our constitutionally limited republic. This is America Talks, radio for patriots on the Orion Talk Radio Network. Orion News Talk is news and views beyond the mainstream media. 1650 AM, Tonawanda, New York, our flagship station, and streaming live into 72 countries at OrionTalkRadio.com. It is Fringe Friday.
And we will control all that you see and hear.
And on Fringe Friday, we take an opportunity to talk about things that we normally don't talk about during the rest of the week, conspiracy theories, the unexplained, that sort of thing. And to that end, we have a very special guest with us tonight on the program from Light on Conspiracies at lightonconspiracies.com, Ole Damegaard, author of the book Coup d'Etat in Slow Motion. Ole, welcome to the program.
Thank you so very much.
Well, it's an honor to have you with us. Ole will be joining us on a regular basis on this program every 3 or 4 weeks or so to enlighten us on his research. He's an investigative journalist. He's done quite a bit in his life. And I think we'll begin by asking you, Ole, to give us a little bit about your background to those who are listening to the program, what you're all about, and you've done a tremendous amount of work. Let us know what you're all about here.
It's a long story. Well, I've been into many different areas, and I just feel that my spirit has pulled me in many different directions, but I've always really looked for the truth in all areas, and I'm an award-winning author, I'm an award-winning artist, I'm an inventor, I'm a former journalist, I'm an investigator, and I've spent almost 30 years of my life looking into especially the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, the JFK assassination, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, 9/11, Oklahoma City. Well, you name it, all the way up until the current false flag operations that are going on now on a very regular basis. And I put a lot of focus trying to expose how these false flag operations are used as a tool to dupe the public people into thinking that something else happened, that what actually was going on, and also to explain what the agenda is and why these false flag operations are carried out and in the way they're done.
Now, this all started for you with an investigation into the assassination of Olof Palme. How did that investigation get underway? And take us on a journey through this. And I want to tell people to order your book. It's an e-book, Coup d'Etat in Slow Motion. So I don't want you giving us a ton of information about the book because I want people to buy it. But what I do want you to do is take us through your journey of how the investigation into the death of Olof Palme led you to a connection between the JFK assassination, Robert F. Kennedy, John Lennon, and others.
It was actually the other way around. In the early 1980s, that was the first time I saw the Zapruder film, and I'm sure your listeners have seen that. It's a bystander who filmed the actual assassination of JFK, and in that film, you can very clearly see that the president was hit, the final headshot was hit from the front and the right, from the grassy knoll, not from up in the school book depository where the lone Patsy Lee Harvey Oswald is said to have been positioned. And when I saw that, I just felt that, oh my God, something with the official story is totally wrong here. So I started reading everything I could get hold of, and I think in the end I read 100, 200 books, I don't know how many, but a lot. And the more I got into this assassination, the more confused I got, because it was like, it felt like a labyrinth inside an enigma, inside of a secret hidden inside a safety box with a key thrown away and then dumped in the sea. Very, very complex. And so I started writing a book just for my own sake to try and clear out what actually happened, because it's so multi-layered. And after a while, once again, I got very confused, because when I read, for instance, one book, let's take one person. In one book, this specific person was working for the CIA. Then in another book, he was working for the FBI. Then in a third book, he was working for the Chicago mob. And then in the fourth book, he was partly, at times, part of the Secret Service. And it was just very confusing for a while, until I discovered that all of it was actually true, that the same guy was working for the CIA, but deeply involved with a mob, and also funded by the FBI. And the more I looked into these type of people, it turned out that many of them were on both sides. I mean, it was like the CIA and the mob are nowadays more or less two sides of the same coin, and it's very, very difficult to see where the line goes between the so-called good guys and the bad guys. And after that, the more I got into the JFK assassination, the more I also got interested in the Robert Kennedy assassination and Martin Luther King and so on. And after a while, I started to almost see like a template on how these political assassination on a high level was carried out. And I looked into older assassinations like the Abraham Lincoln and others, and it went all the way back almost to Julius Caesar. And it felt like it was almost like an old Roman tactic on how to carry out an assassination like that and fool the public into thinking that it was the work of a lone crazy guy, when it was... a very powerful, often coup d'etat that had taken place. So while I got into this, I mean, I tried to write down this template as detailed as possible. I know that the assassinations look different on the street level. I mean, there are different ways of taking care of the victim, of the murder victim, but how they kill him. But I'm talking about the whole setup. And then while I was discovering more and more about this, the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, was gunned down in the streets of Stockholm. It was a cold February evening when he and his wife had been at the cinema, and they were on their way home walking to the old town of Stockholm, when a lone gunman turned up behind them and fired one shot that killed the Prime Minister. And he fired another shot at the Prime Minister's wife, and then took off. He ran up the stairs, and that was the last secure observation of this killer. And at that time, we were being told that it was the work of a lone crazy guy, that the police was really looking into it, and for sure they will get him very shortly. But, and me growing up in a country like Sweden, I thought the police are the good guys, I can totally trust them, whatever they say is the truth, and so I felt very shocked that he had been shot just like the rest of the population. I mean, it was really a deep state of shock that overtook the nation. And but then after a little while, things started changing, and I saw very strange things around this case as well. And then after a while, I saw that, my God, this assassination fits into this template as well. So I came to a point where I said, okay, if what I suspect has actually happened in Sweden as well, then they will follow, let's say that this was 0.7 on the template, that the next step for the investigation in Sweden would be to do this, whatever this was, like blah, 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 and find this type of evidence or whatever. And 2 weeks later, boom, there it was. And that really freaked me out, because up until then, I thought that I lived in a different type of country without the corruption and violence and so on. And now I suddenly saw that if this template is used in Sweden, just as in the States and in other countries that I looked into these type of assassinations, then there might be a big possibilities that they could even be connected. So I started looking at these cases on a higher level. And this took me down an almost 30-year-long road of deep, deep investigations that also led to a point where I had to leave Sweden. I had two friends that got killed in very strange ways, and I just felt this is getting too close, so I decided to leave Sweden with my family, and we now live in Spain.
This is an absolutely fascinating story. So you obviously felt in fear for your life and the life of your family members. And obviously, how did your two friends die? What was the mystery surrounding their death?
The mystery was one of the guys, both of these guys were very nice gentlemen, very serious people. Private people who was just very, very saddened by what had happened to Sweden. We were a small group of private investigators, I mean private people, looking into this, because it was very obvious that the police and the official investigation did absolutely nothing. They were just covering the whole thing up. And so we met on a regular basis in the home of one of these people. His name was Fritz Geir Pettersson. And he was, the difficult thing once you start looking into these conspiracies is that there's a lot of people with big egos. And these big egos have a tendency to take over common sense. And where people get carried away, they get too big-headed in their ideas and so on. And both these people stepped on toes that shouldn't be stepped on. They didn't understand that they were in a minefield. And I, for one, was mentioning this more than once to them. But then one of them, he really approached the official investigation from time to time, and just pushing them give out more and more documents and material and so on. And then one day he was found in the subway with a crushed skull. And it was not so much how that happened, but then how the police refused to look into it as nothing else but an accident. And also he was taken to a good hospital. And then suddenly, while he was being well taken care of at that hospital, they moved him to a different hospital that was a lot less equipped for his type of injury. And there suddenly difficulties occurred, and he died shortly after. And then it took almost a year before we could, we had to more or less with legal force get the autopsy report. And then the autopsy report indirectly said that he had been hit with something very violent to the head. And the other man, he was doing the same. Then he went for a normal medical checkup and came out with a very violent type of cancer that killed him shortly. And that could be in a disease, but in this group was also very high-ranking police officers, and one of them, he made an official accusation saying that this man had been murdered. And he was not somebody who came out with accusations like that easily, so or lightly. So I strongly think that this cancer thing was not natural. And there are several other cases around this assassination where cancer has been one of the things where people are totally fine, then they get too deep into it, and within a week they're dead of cancer. It's like scary, to say the least. It was really, really sad to lose these friends. And I also was visited once when I was not at home. And they do it in a way, for instance, in my case, they got into my apartment, and then they just rearranged the stuff inside the apartment and left again, locked the door. Everything was exactly the same, but things were totally changed inside. And this is just the same way as the mob do, that they go in, they pass the alarms, they get into the house, and they change things just to tell you that we can get you. You are being under observation, so you better back off or you will be taken care of. And it is a frightening area to get into because these are very violent people.
Do you still fear for your life and the lives of your family today, even in Spain?
I mean, even in Spain, that has nothing to do with the thing, because the people behind these assassinations, which I'm going to talk about, it's the same small power elite, as far as my investigation has been able to show, and they work on a global scale, so whatever country I'm in is not a safety net at all. But I feel calm and comfortable, and also very determined to continue this work, because I think it's extremely important that this get exposed, because if we do not expose this, this group is trying to force the world into becoming a very dark, controlled, like a very violent fascist state, and this is not something I will support in any way. Because this world is supposed to be a beautiful, harmonious, wonderful place for us all. But it's almost like there's a violent bully, like in a schoolyard, terrorizing the neighborhood. But this is on a global scale, but the group is the same. It's just a small group of people. We're talking maybe a couple of thousand in total that are just terrorizing the rest of us. And most people have no idea what's going on. They cannot see how it's all connected, and that's why I do my utmost to help expose that.
Before we get to who this group is and what their agenda is, obviously through your research and your investigative work, you've determined that there was a common thread or a pattern involved in the assassinations of all of these people. You've highlighted in detail to a certain extent how there were like a step-by-step process in each investigation of an assassination, where at some point this piece of evidence is either manufactured or discovered, a dupe is arrested and charged as a lone gunman or something like that. What specifically is this pattern and this template for such a pattern?
Would you like me to just give an example step by step how what I'm talking about?
Sure.
Okay, so if we say we have somebody that this group wants to take out, it's normally either an enemy of the group or an insider, somebody in their own ranks that they don't trust anymore, or is becoming too big-headed or out of control, or because this happens when people get power, they get sometimes out of control, and when this group cannot steer them in the way that defeats their agenda, they will get rid of them. And normally they try to avoid that people will notice anything. So it can be anything from a pill to a cancer to a car accident to a suicide to all of these things. But then from time to time, in my opinion, it feels like they need to make a statue, like an example. And then they do it in a more violent way, just like they did with JFK in my humble opinion, the reason why JFK was taken out so openly in front of so many people and all these cameras and all of that, also the way Jack Ruby shot Oswald right in front of the TV cameras, that was to send a message to people in the dark corridors of power saying, you better back off because we can take out anyone at any time, anywhere. So back in line and keep quiet. And this is also why more or less always after one of these big assassinations or conspiracies, that there's almost like a second conspiracy of total silence. It's the official story and nothing else. There's no discussions. There's nothing else when it comes to people in power. Just quiet. This doesn't mean that the people know how the assassination was done. Absolutely not. Or who did it. But they are very aware of the power behind it. Okay. So if I should get in step by step, would you like that?
Yeah. Just be advised that in about 2 minutes, we're going to have to take a break at the bottom of the hour. So if I cut you off, it's only because we're going to the break and then we'll continue. But go ahead and start.
Okay. So the first thing is that the victim is you send in an observation team, a surveillance team, and this team is often consists of two or three small teams of two to three people. These people will keep the victim under surveillance. They will follow him everywhere. They will check out habits. They will check out where he works, where would be a good place to do the hit, escape routes, like so that they have alternative escape routes, where the escape cars would be positioned, where the shooters should be, because there's always more than one shooter. Normally there's at least two to three, sometimes in triangular fire, so that they have option 1, 2, 3 should the first one fail. And this takes about 3 weeks or something like that, where they put down in very detailed all the habits and all the details about the guy who's to become the victim. At the same time, while this is done, they start preparing a patsy, and this patsy can be, it needs to be someone that works well in media, somebody who looks weird or looks dangerous or have a violent background or say crazy things or so on. In the old days, in the Cold War, it used to be old Soviet Russians or East Germans. These worked really well to scare normal people. Then that went into Muslims. You know, Muslims were in the trend for years.
Let me hold you right there, Ole. We're at the bottom of the hour break. We'll be back in 5 minutes. My guest is Ole Damgaard. The book is Coup d'Etat in Slow Motion. His website, Talk Radio Network, news and views beyond the mainstream media. We'll get back to our guest, Ole Damgaard, in just a moment. But before we do, this programming note, on October the 19th, that's a week from tomorrow, self-professed biblical scholar Joseph Atwill is planning to make public some very flammable allegations. At a day-long symposium called Covert Messiah in London, England, he's set to unveil purported evidence that Roman aristocrats manufactured Jesus Christ, a claim that, if substantiated, would rock the Christian faith to its core. He's set to do that a week from tomorrow in London, England, but he will do it here this coming Monday night at 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on Orion Talk Radio. Joseph Atwill will join us to make his case that Jesus Christ was manufactured by Roman aristocrats. Right now we're talking with Ole Damgaard of LightOnsConspiracies.com. By the way, you can make a donation to Ole Damgaard. He could use the help to continue his investigative work. You can do that at his website, LightOnConspiracies.com. You can also get the book, Coup d'Etat in Slow Motion. Only before we took the break, you were telling me about the pattern of events that occurs when someone is going to be targeted. Let's take one step back real quick, and before we continue with that, how are these targets selected? Are they all people with a lot of power, a lot of fame? What makes them qualified as a target to be taken out by this mysterious group?
Like I said, either it's an enemy of theirs, or normally it's one of their own in one of their own ranks, somebody that they have a problem with, or who has become too big-headed, or started his own. Sometimes power corrupts the mentality of people, and too much money, and they get out of control. And for this power elite as well, they have sometimes problem with that, and then they need to statue an example. And when they do that, it's always very violent, just to scare other people off as well.
Okay, so for example, like I was looking at the number of assassinated individuals that you mention on your website, and I was trying to figure out who would John Lennon be an enemy of?
John Lennon, I mean, all of these people, or many of these people, if you look at them, they are people of peace, people who are standing up talking about peace, about harmony between countries and people and so on. And the military industrial complex and other parts of this global elite that we're talking about, who is behind all of this, their agenda is death and destruction. That is the name of the game in their world. And anyone who stands up and speaks out so that people really listen to them is one of their enemies. And this is a main reason why JFK was taken out, Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, Lady Diana, and so on, and John Lennon.
Okay. All right. I think I understand where you're coming from. This group, this sinister group, has an agenda of violence and actually, it sounds like a terrorist group, basically. They're trying to frighten everyone into realizing that no one is safe, no one is out of the possibility of being a target. So they go after people of all different stripes, all different political parties, all different agendas, just to keep everyone on the edge of their seat and concerned about it.
I wouldn't say that. The targets are very, very specific, and they don't go. It's not a matter of just killing people right, left, and center. They're very specific targets when it comes to this level. They are also behind many of the major terrorist attacks, according to my investigation. I can go into that later on. So I tell you, these people, they're so central in so much of the sinister things that have been going on for the last century or so, at least decades and decades. But yeah,
Matt Ole is, for example, when you talked about the JFK assassination taking place in a very public place, and the purpose of it was to scare people into realizing that no leader, no person, a person can be taken out at any time and at any place. It doesn't mean that they don't have selected targets like you're referring to. Obviously, they're not willy-nilly killing people right and left, but it's letting people know that we can do this whenever we want to, at any time, at any place, and in any way.
It's a very clear message, and the message is exactly that.
Okay, I'll let you continue now with the process of how these targets are selected and the process of taking them out.
Okay, so as I said, first there's a surveillance team flown in, and then once they've really mapped out all the habits of the victim to become, and where he works, routes he drives on and off, and so they get a clear picture of where to hit him and so on. This is put down in very great detail and reported down to a commando center that will be central in the whole assassination that it will be taken care of shortly. Anyway, so the surveillance team has been there for a while. Meanwhile, I'm also preparing a patsy, if I'm the one behind it, let's say. I also need to prepare a patsy in the meantime. And this patsy, like I said, he needs to work well in media. He needs to look so that people, the public, will buy it. And so they often take, or they used to take somebody that looked weird or said weird things or had a violent background. Like I also mentioned, they during the Cold War, then they had the Russians or East Germans. These were the favorites. Then they went into making patsies out of Muslims, because Muslims work super good in media. They're dark, they have big eyebrows and a mustache, and they can look very frightening to Western people. And they have names like Abdul Karim Sultan, something like that, that the public will say, ooh, that sounds really strange. And also they can come from countries where most people, they can't even spell the name of the country. So that's perfect. And so the Muslims have been very, very innocently accused of many, many, many of these things that they have absolutely no part in. at all. And just because they work so well as a patsy. Then nowadays, it's gone from, this thing has been a bit worn out with the Muslim thing. So now they've gone from Muslims into making them blonde, blue-eyed, so that they can look like anyone, making the public think that, oh my God, it could even be my next door neighbor or my son or whatever. So I need even more protection, because this is the whole thing, to scare the public into getting more and more protection. That's one of the main things that that they want to, so that they can move forward with their agenda. Anyway, so I'm preparing a patsy. I prepare evidence that I can, that can be used right away. As soon as the shots are fired, the evidence will point towards this patsy. This could be, it could be any type of, if it's a group, it's somebody I have problems with, I want to get rid of anyway, or it could be anything, you know, like you just make it up, like a bird lover group or a yoga group or Mormons or you name it. And then in media that I control to a lot extent, I leak out information about this group. For instance, I say that on Tuesday this group have meetings and they have a leader with a big beard. And when the leader says, come here, the members of this congregation will come. And then I add, and maybe they have hidden guns under the floor or something like that. You know, making it, making the subconscious prepared in the public that, ooh, that is a weird group. You know, so you start slowly preparing the people so that it won't come as a shock when once the hit is done and you point at them. So they're a little prepared subconsciously. So I got evidence, I've got the surveillance things going, I've got evidence, I've got a patsy that is pointed out. I also need to control this guy so that, or this group, so that I know when the shots are fired, that group will be somewhere where I can't get hold of them. And if it's a lone crazy guy, the reason why they always want him to be alone is because then there's no conspiracy or planning needed. You know, it's only one person. And if he's crazy, then you don't need a motive either. He just went up and shot the guy, and because he was crazy. So just, we take the patsy, either shoot him or put him in jail and let him rot, and case closed. Nobody needs to ever dig into anything. There's no need for a real investigation or anything. He was alone, he was crazy, case closed. So that is, every time there's a lone crazy guy involved, I would say, please pay attention, because something very strange and sinister could be going on, because this is a very crucial part that keeps repeating again and again, this lone crazy guy. Okay, so at the same time, while I'm preparing the evidence and I have this patsy on standby, I also put my own investigation on standby. These are people that I control, my people in the key position, so that as soon as the shots are fired, my own investigation moves in and kicks out all normal, honest policemen and detectives. They are just pushed aside, so that people that, like I said, that I control go in, and their only task is to point, they went that away, they went that away, they went that away. These, my own investigation, they will never listen to the real witnesses. They will always disregard real testimonials. They will even frighten and terrorize witnesses. And also they will manufacture thousands of pages of documents that will say absolutely nothing. And the only thing they will do, they will point at the patsy. And another task they have is, like people like myself being a truth seeker, if I keep pushing, they will also get people to take care of me, to get rid of witnesses, to get rid of problems that will destroy the official story. So I have this, my own investigation on standby. I got the surveillance team checking him out. I got the patsy prepared and the evidence prepared. Then it's time to fly in the actual hit team. The hit team is often quite big. It could be 6 to 9 people normally. And these people are highly skilled assassins, normally right wing, either former mercenaries, policemen, also purely assassins, security men, that type of people. High, very disciplined, very violent, and just, I mean, killers. And it's very important that these people often come from different countries, different backgrounds, different groups, so that there's no apparent connection with between them, making it very, very difficult for somebody to look into and see, find out who did this. You know, if they came from the same group, it would be very easy to just point them out and say, whoops, these are the guys who did it. So that's very important. And then all of this operation is also extremely compartmentalized, meaning that nobody knows anything else than just their little part. Often the people who are killing, who are doing the real killing are not even aware of who they're shooting. They just know that that guy in a blue shirt who's going to come out, or this guy in a blue car, or whatever it is. They're not even aware of who the victim is. They don't know where the order comes from. They don't know where the money paying for the whole thing comes from. They're just aware of their part. And also they don't know about the other members in the team as well, because normally they have code names. And so you only know about your separate part, meaning that if you decide to become a whistleblower, you will only be able to give out information about a very small, small little part of the whole conspiracy.
So that people can't put the whole thing together, because nobody has all the information or all the pieces of the puzzle at the same time. They're all just a little bit a part of it.
This is crucial and very standard. It's extremely compartmentalized. And like I say, always code names. And then the whole operation is controlled from some kind of highly technical center that would be close to the site of the actual assassination. It could be in a hotel or an underground communication central, you know, where the 911 control is, or you know, any type of things like that is where normally where they control these operations from. Okay, so then you have the assassination itself, that when the day is has come. Like I say, they normally use at least 2 to 3 different shooters, sometimes in triangular fire. But it's just crucial that the victim dies. That is the absolute main thing. He must not survive. And so they have alternative shooters. If the first one should fail, then there's option 2 and 3 and so on. And also there optional escape cars, so should one of them, should something go wrong, there would be more than one escape car available and so on. At the same time also, this whole group, including the surveillance team, have been taken care of by people on location. This is normally, like when it happened in Sweden, these are Swedish people. But if it's in another country, that would be people from that country. And these people will be normally, once again, a right-wing military, police, security people, mercenaries, these type of people. And they will supply them with weapons, vehicles, food, ammo, all of these things. And also the group, the hit team, as well as the surveillance team, will be moved from safe house to safe house so that the neighbors won't notice anything. This is also very important, so that they can do it being not noticed, really. Okay, boom, the shots are fired, the guy goes down, he's dead. Then what happens is that one way of spotting a conspiracy is very often that it's not what is done, but what is not done. For instance, if you or I do something really stupid and drive a car into a supermarket or something like that, it will only take a minute or so before the whole place is swarmed by police. But when it comes to a hit on a prime minister or anyone on that level, very often it's almost like the police task goes into like a coma or stand down for maybe 10, 15 minutes or something like that, where everything is delayed. When people call in and say, please, there's been a shooting, there's been a this, they say, yes, thank you, the police is on their way. But they're not arriving. They're not arriving. And this is so that the hit team themselves had time enough to get away. And also on the site where the hit is done, very often there's also police cars or people in uniforms. But these are not real police cars. They are real police cars, but there are not police in them, you know, like normal police. These, instead, these people are put there to help stop should any normal private person try to intervene or chase them in their car or something like that. Then they will stop that car or get, you know, if it's a pedestrian who starts running after them, they will stop him somehow. So to get the whole hit team out of the way so that they can get away. And then once they're away, then suddenly the whole police force comes and just swarms the whole place and says, boom, they close the whole area off and they start looking very intensely in all the wrong places, giving the illusion of that, my God, we're really looking for someone here. And in the meantime, while this is happening, then the normal investigation or my own investigation, they go, they get activated and move into place. And the main job to start with is to speak to the media. And while speaking to the media, they will say, oh, it's so awful what has happened. And my God, we need to do everything we can and we will do whatever is in our power, but it's the patsy. And while they're doing that and the media is looking the other way, you have a cleaning team that moves into the area, to the crime site. And what they do, once again, they're dressed in police uniforms and so on. And what they do is they clean up the place for the real evidence and they plant the evidence that will point to the patsy. So that very, very quickly, everything will be pointing to this patsy, and the evidence that is planted are always, or sometimes so clumsily. I mean, it's so obvious. Like in 9/11, do you remember the in this rental car where they planted the Quran, and then also an instructional video on how to fly a 757? I mean, come on! I mean, these guys couldn't even fly a Cessna, but thanks to this video, they say that no, they could fly a 757. And because of that, they could do all of these impossible things in the air and manage to fly it right into the Pentagon and so on.
At this point, Ole, we're going to have to leave it there. Can you come back next week, Friday, at the same time?
Friday?
Yes.
I'm sorry, can we talk about this off air? Because I think I've got another interview that day.
Absolutely. You're a fascinating guest. The name of the book, I want to make sure that we promote it because the show's getting ready to wrap up here. The name of the book, Ole Damigard wrote it. It's called Coup d'etat in Slow Motion. We invite you to visit his website at lightonconspiracies.com. And whether or not he's able to be with us next Friday at this time, he is going to be a regular contributor to the program. He's a fascinating guest. I invite you to donate to his website. I invite you to purchase the book for download. It is an ebook. Next time we meet, Ole, I want to talk about who this group is. You said it consists of only a few thousand people, but it's a small group, but obviously they wield a lot of power. And we need to talk more about this. And I just think it's been a fascinating hour. I'm very riveted by everything that you had to say. So I want to get you back on here. We will definitely correspond off the air to determine when your next appearance will be available. But we'd love to have you back on the program, as I said, as a regular contributor, because I feel you have a lot to offer.
For sure. I'll be back next Friday as well. I can say that now.
Okay, very, very good. I appreciate that. We'll look forward to having Ole Damigard back on next Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern right here on Orion Talk Radio to continue this. In the meantime, I want to thank you for being with us tonight. We will talk to you again next Friday.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Ole Damigard, the website is lightonconspiracies.com, and we invite you to buy his book, Coup d'etat in Slow Motion. That is going to put the capper on it for this edition of America Talks, Radio for Patriots on the Orion Talk Radio Network. Reminder, Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, my special guest, biblical scholar Joseph Atwill, who claims that he has evidence that Roman aristocrats manufactured Jesus Christ, a claim that, if substantiated, as I said, would rock the very foundation of the Christian faith to its core. Please be here Monday night at 6 p.m. Eastern for that. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. I'm David Zublik. Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, we will do it again.